I feel out of place here in the studio. I'm the only person wearing headsets here. Lisa Roberson and Matt Douglas both here in the studio with me. And neither one of them wanted to put the headsets on. See, the headsets got us in trouble yesterday.
Well, you're the consummate professional. That's right. You couldn't hear the phone there for little while.
Yeah. Well, when there are three of us in studio, it's not a big deal. But when you're doing an interview over the phone, you can't hear them in here unless you actually have these headsets on. But fortunately, we've got Lisa Roberson with the Chronicle-Telegram in studio with us on our local beat with Lisa. It's brought to you by Vandermark Jewelers. Vandermark Jewelers is a trusted name in jewelry. They're located right down the street from the station on Broad Street. They're right across from the hospital. They're going to be at Best of Lorain County tomorrow. Looking forward to having Jim Vandermark on the show to tell you all about their great summer deals. Make sure you stop on by Vandermark Jewelers. Lisa, will you be at Best of Lorain County tomorrow?
I don't know. I probably will, actually. Now think about it and put it on my calendar and go out there and see. And I was there last year, and it was really fun.
That was awesome last year. That was my first experience at that event last year. I was blown away by how busy it got. I mean, I think we went on the air at 3 like we normally do, and I think we got off the air right around 6 o'clock, but at like 4:30, 4:45-ish, it was like they opened those doors, and it was like all of Lorain County just came pouring
through.
People
started flooding in. Yeah. You know, they want to see the best cupcakes and the best meals and all of those things that they have to offer. So,
the best of the best. It's good stuff. Well, we're looking forward to broadcasting from Best of Lorain County tomorrow. Well, a lot of things to dive into today. I want to start with this. This was something I know that was published about 6 days ago. It was about House Bill 168 passing, and that's going to affect the city of Elyria and the cemeteries in the area. Also, I thought it was fascinating reading through your story that, you know, this was certainly brought to the attention of those in city council because there were residents that were actually getting their own lawnmowers out and cutting the grass in these cemeteries.
Yes, a lot of people will know that the city has been struggling this year to keep up with the grass and the weeds at the city cemeteries. The city operates 3 cemeteries, but they actually operated with about 3 employees. So it's like 1 employee per cemetery who has to make sure that he keeps up with all the grounds, all of the weeding and the maintenance. And while doing that, they also work as a team to dig the graves, close the graves, handle the cemeteries and the funerals. And so it's just a lot of work right now. And so they're very understaffed. And, you know, residents have been speaking out because the grave sites have not looked their best.
This story fascinated when I read it the first time. I didn't realize, I guess, cities kind of play that role in cemeteries and things of that nature. I thought a lot of them were owned by churches, and I'm sure a lot of them are. But is that common? I mean, did you find that in your research, or did you see that in anywhere else?
No, cities don't typically want to get into the cemetery business because, I mean, there's no profit in it. It's a lot of work. And, you know, you do pay a fee when you purchase your plot to care for it in perpetuity. But, you know, when you buy a plot in 1800, the amount of money you pay for it then is not going to, match what's needed to care for it today. You know, even if you buy something in 1960, you know, the cost of it from 1960 is not the cost of it today. And so they're just, the cost of running the cemeteries is outpacing the amount of money that comes into the cemetery.
Yeah, a lot of maintenance, obviously. And I think you had mentioned, too, in one of your stories, there was talk of getting a zero-turn mower to help kind of to keep up on that.
Yes, they had one mower that went down and had an accident, and it broke beyond repair. And so last night, City Council voted to go ahead and authorize that purchase so they can purchase this new mower for about $18,000 so they can get out there and kind of do some work as quickly as possible.
How much land is that? I mean, that's a lot of maintenance. I have a backyard. I can only imagine. I mean, how much
There's
land do
they have? We have 3 cemeteries, and so we're talking acres and acres of land.
Wow. Ooh, and you said $18,000 for that zero-turn mower?
Yes.
Whoa. Okay. I had no idea those cost that much.
Oh, yeah. Which is the reason why they had to go to city council and kind of see if they can move some money around to purchase this mower.
Sure. But I'd imagine, I mean, in a cemetery, I mean, you're driving around headstones and things of that nature. I mean, you've got to have something like that to accomplish the task.
And some headstones in some areas of the cemeteries, when you're talking like Ridgelawn, which is the oldest cemetery in the city, you know, you have to move into those areas in very delicate ways because there's a lot of raised gravestones and small gravestones, a lot of monuments. It's just not, you know, one size fits all when you talk about monuments and headstones for families so it can make it easy for you to maintain them. So you have to kind of figure out which way you want to go.
We're bouncing around here a little bit. So I want to go back to something that you wrote, or what was rather published earlier today, some breaking news in the area. Matt, I know you mentioned it in your local news update, but there was a resignation. City Councilman Mark Craig resigned, and you know, everybody sees resignation, they think, oh boy, what happened? But in this case, it was nothing out of the ordinary.
Nothing out of the ordinary. I just spoke with Councilman Mark Craig right before I came on the air, and he said he bought some land in Vermilion and built a house for his family, and they just took possession of the keys, and they're going to move this month. Hmm. He said he should be out of Elyria by the end of the month. It was just, you know, he wanted some a new home for his family, and since he's moving out of the city, can't be a city councilman anymore.
Makes sense, I suppose. So what's the next step in that process? Do you know? I mean, did somebody have to get in there right away, or do they take some time to replace?
The seat has to be filled within 30 days of the vacancy.
Oh, wow.
The vacancy is effective July 31st, so they have to fill the seat within 30 days after that. If they don't, then the mayor gets to appoint someone to the position. And so the majority of city council gets to pick someone. So the question I have now that I'm trying to reach the council president, Mike Lotko, is what's going to be the process for picking it, because the city's charter does not spell out exactly how they have to pick the person. It just says it has to be picked by a majority vote. So it doesn't say if he needs to, you know, take applications, if you're going to put names in a hat. You know,
all the residents of Elyria's 4th Ward into a hat, yeah.
You know, they just say the council has to pick someone.
Interesting. So there's no real election process in this, is there?
Not with this particular seat, because it's an opening, so council can just go out and pick someone from the ward who they think could be best to represent, you know, the residents in that area, and say do you want to be the new council person? You know, they can accept applications from people and kind of narrow it down from there. So I'm still trying to get some answers on what's going to be the process. The law director said that the charter did not specifically spell out the next steps.
Wow. Well, council's going to be extraordinarily busy. That's one of the things they're dealing with that's time sensitive. You wrote about another earlier this week. Finance Director Ted Pileski, we've had on the show before, Law Director Scott Sarazin, urging council to move a little bit faster on something. And this is a temporary tax. And what is this temporary tax, and why the sudden urge to move so fastly to get this on the November ballot?
The city's had this temporary tax, as a 0.5% temporary tax, for about 30 years. This is the second one we have. You know, Issue 6 passed in 2016, but 30 years ago was the first time the city had a temporary tax put on the ballot. Every 5 years, it has to go back up for voter approval. And so now is that time. And I think it kind of got away from council a little bit, the time crunch. They have to pass this by August 8th and get it to the Board of Elections. And so that's only one more meeting that they have. They have an August 6th meeting, so they have to vote August 6th if they're ready to go back to voters. It's a renewal. This is no new money. This is basically the voters of Elyria gave the city a raise 30 years ago. And so now they want to say, you know, whether or not they want to continue to pay the raise. So, but, you know, they still have to go through the process of an election and a campaign and kind of educating people and let people know this is not new money. We've already been receiving this money for the last 30 years. Will you continue to give it to us?
It's just an extension. That's all it is.
It's
essentially
all it is.
Okay. All right. Because I think when people look at that, immediately they think, wait a minute, a tax? We're going to pay more money? No. I mean, if it goes away, you'd pay less. But essentially, this is going to generate a lot more money, too. And I think in your article, you mentioned that Ted said, look, this generates a ton of money that the city needs.
Yes. It generates about $6 million each calendar year, which is a significant amount of money in Elyria. When you're talking about the general fund, it's about a $30 million general fund. So $6 million would be a significant hit for the city if they lost the money.
Yeah, no question about that. That's a ton. Lisa Roberson with the Chronicle-Telegram is our guest here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. It's our local beat with Lisa. It's brought to you by Vandermeer Jewelers. I want to ask you about an article you wrote a few days ago talking about the number of overdoses in the area actually going down. We actually had Elyria Police Chief Dwayne Whiteley in studio with us yesterday, and he was telling us about how the number of overdoses had gone down, but you know, while that sounds great, that's also something that sounds like it should be met with at least some degree of cautious optimism.
Yes, because, you know, one weekend of, you know, a bad mix of drugs coming into our community can change that. The police chief has told me. He says, you know, that, you know, they just pulled, you know, working with multiple agencies and with a federal indictment, 19 suspected drug dealers off the streets in Elyria. So, you know, that doesn't mean that the just drug problem has gone away or will go away. And so if we're on pace to have about 120 to 150 overdoses this year, you know, that's still a high number. And so he's telling people that even though the overdoses are down, to not see this as Elyria has probably reached their tipping point. Now we're going the back way down. He's saying, you know, we're just going to be still watching.
Indeed. Well, I mean, and he was in studio with us yesterday. He said kind of along the same lines, yeah, we'll still continue to do the things that we're doing. It's not like you can just take your foot off the gas pedal and stop attacking a problem like that because it's been an issue for a while. Well, before we let you go, Lisa, what kinds of stories do you have working on for the rest of the week?
Well, I'm sure you've seen the drone footage that they're finally going to be tearing down the old grandstands at Ely Stadium. I was out there today, and I was, you know, they picked up some bleachers and they tore out the inside. I was hoping to get some wrecking ball shots of them taking down the grandstand and, you know, passing out some bricks to people. They haven't done that yet. We're hoping that for the rest of the week. I've also been talking with Tom Stuber, who runs the Lakota Way, about some changes in some state laws that's going to allow for some more beds for women in treatment who are facing this opiate epidemic, which is really good news. He said, you know, right now the limit was 16 beds, and now they can push it up to 20, 30, 36, even more. They're in a facility that used to be a 100-bed nursing home, so he says, as long as the demand is out there, then they'll continue to treat people. Now that this cap has been lifted, it's going to be a really good thing for Lorain County.
Good stuff as always. Well, Lisa, we always appreciate the time. Thank you so much for joining us here in studio, and we will do this again next week.
Okay, I'll be here.
All righty, Lisa Roberson with the Chronicle-Telegram joining us on our local beat with Lisa, brought to you by Vandermark Jewelers on Broad Street, right across from the hospital, a trusted name in jewelry. And we're going to find out what kinds of summer deals are in store for all of you if you visit Vandermark Jewelers tomorrow when we speak with Jim Vandermark at Best of Lorain County.